one of the reasons I love the industry and I loved the position of CISO is you're constantly trying to just improve, right? You're not trying to rebuild all the time. You know that the business might want to rebuild, but you're there to constantly improve that foundation, continually building your team and continually building your capabilities. So regardless of who comes and goes, you have that foundation and you continue to grow it.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve speaks with Eric Avakian. Eric served as CISO for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in the United States for over a decade before he moved into the private sector, where he currently works as the technical counselor at Infotech Research Group. Eric brings his passion and experience to a lively conversation in which he and Steve discuss coping with change through multiple leadership turnovers, practical examples of how security leaders can demonstrate their department's value to an organization beyond theoretical breach prevention, and overcoming challenges in the public and private sectors.
So, Eric, lovely to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, you're a former state chief information security officer for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so you have obviously seen a fair amount of public sector change, intrigue, and a pile of other things that will have come across the information security desk, no doubt, in that time, because you were there for nearly two decades in the public sector. Tell me a little bit about, so that people can understand, what exactly does being CISO for a state in the United States actually look like? What is involved?
Well, it's a great question, because it's just, particularly in government, you know, the state CISO is really kind of that glue that really provides the glue between IT and the business, because security is there to really make sure everything's kind of kept up and running, secured. And so it's really, really important that the security team understands the business. And I think these days, and what I've seen over the past, you know, like you mentioned, two decades in public sector even, that security and the CISO role has certainly changed. So it's about working with the business and understanding what the business needs to succeed that I really think is the biggest change that I've seen, particularly today. So it's about how can security and how can the CISO have a seat at the table from a business perspective and be a business partner and not be the group of folks that say no and stuff like that. It's really about enabling the business. How can we say yes, but do things more securely and put a positive spin on it? Whereas, you know, in the past, you know, security's looked at, oh, these are the guys that say no. So it's really the CISO is a partner to the business, a collaborator, building relationships. And really, that's been the change, right? It's gone from a less of a technical kind of a thing to being a coach, being a leader, and really working and building those relationships at the business level.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I'm sitting here thinking now, you know, for people who are in the private sector, they can relate to that. I've actually never worked in the public sector. I've worked with public sector, but never been in the public sector itself. But when I look at the way in which something like the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is structured, and you look at the sort of the data flows that are moving around within that, I mean, all aspects of it, how can you possibly get your arms around all of that? And then add on top of that, the fact that during the time you were there, you saw a number of different governors come and go, different policies, different presidents. You know, when we talk about change and scope in the private sector, it just strikes me that working at a state level must dwarf that. I mean, you know, it's just completely different.
Yeah, I mean, so you're absolutely right. So your point, in the private sector, you could be working for a CEO that's there for many, many years. It's very, very steady. And with state or local government, it's very much, there's a lot of change. And yeah. So almost in this position, you have to be somebody that really embraces change. Change is hard. But I think in the CISO role, we have to be able to, as leaders, embrace that change, because change is going to come. To your point, parties change. I worked through three different governors, three different CIOs, three different administrations, and I saw a lot of change, even from going 180 from one side to the next as far as you know, how we pursue IT strategy. So that's challenging, and it's really trying to keep on top of that. I think it's looking at understanding what that fabric of the overall network and data flows you mentioned looks like, and really understanding that technical architecture, working closely with our chief technology and architecture teams to really have a foundational common architecture that security can then help bolster and understand where are the gaps, where can we identify the important capabilities, so that it's not just putting band-aids on things, but we're actually building an architecture that's built for the future as IT grows and as particularly public sector government services grow, that the public sector that we can kind of be ready for those changes, because when those new governors come in, they might want to do something different. And even if they do, we still have the security foundational elements that don't change, right? So we want to make sure that our security program thrives and can grow regardless. It's not of a DR&R or whoever, you know, risk is risk. And we want to make sure that we are protecting as much as we can. We're identifying and protecting against attacks and really, you know, looking at it from a risk perspective and what's that risk to the business? How do we minimize it? But really having that foundation in place so that we're not constantly changing the security structure or the security architecture, but we're building on it and we're bolstering all capabilities so that as IT transforms to help the business in the future, and we've seen that, that it can thrive and security can continue to improve over time. One of the reasons I love the industry and I loved the position of CISO is you're constantly trying to just improve, right? You're not trying to rebuild all the time. You know that the business might want to rebuild, but you're there to constantly improve that foundation, continually building your team and continually building your capabilities. So regardless of who comes and goes, you have that foundation and you continue to grow it.
Yeah. And so obviously, big need for things like emotional intelligence, big need for understanding overall strategy. And I think you make a very valid point there, which I think is consistent across both public and private, and which I really like. And that is that you're talking about using security almost as being something of a constant, of a glue that's holding things together in a world of ever-changing evolution. And that, I think, is probably for some of the people listening to this, you know, the nirvana, the place they want to really end up in, because as we know, there is so much change out in the space, which is what makes it interesting, right? I mean, that's the other point you're making.
Yeah, I think it's really about building that foundation. And really, you know, I get it. So, you know, public sector is political. There's a lot of politics, but particularly, as I mentioned earlier, when we look at risk, risk doesn't understand whether it's one side or the other side. It's just risk. Regardless. And we want to make sure that we have that foundation, that glue that you talked about, that really is what it is. And so as the new governor comes in, or as they'll have their new initiatives, they might be 180 degrees from the former administration, but right. It's really up to the security team to make sure that foundation's there. So regardless of what those changes are, that we have at least the foundational elements and we can build on those, and whatever we need to add to bolster the program for those new business initiatives, we can put in with the also understanding, and you meant the other big difference between private sector and public is really, you know, one of the things that I really took to heart is when it comes to funding and really making sure that we're putting those public funds, these taxpayer funds, and making the best use out of them, right? So where we can, reducing duplication of work, duplication of effort, where we're streamlining as much as we can and bolstering at the same time. For instance, you know, back in the day, we saw multiple agencies using the same tools or they're doing the same thing multiple times. How do we combine those forces and those resources so that we can build knowledge, that we can share knowledge, that we can build teams that can assist the entire organization, regardless of where they're at? So it's really looking at it as one team, regardless of what agency you're working with. One of the things we went through is IT transformation, where we really took that approach to build security in at a foundational level to help any organization or any of the agencies from a security perspective. And that brings a lot of, again, commonality, reducing of duplication, and making those effective use, because at the end of the day, it is taxpayer money. And that is one of the big differences that comes to public sector. And I took that to heart because we have to do our fiduciary duty as public servants when it comes to spending that money. And we want to do it in the most cost-effective manner as we can.
I'm glad you mentioned this issue of funding, because, you know, one of the things that I hear constantly is security leaders talking about the fact that they aren't sufficiently well funded, whether that be in terms of hard cash, or whether it be in terms of resources that are available to them. And you make a very valid point there that, you know, working in the public sector, you are under public scrutiny, right? You do have to justify, probably to a greater extent than in the private sector, how you go about getting access to funds and what you do with them. So give us some tips that people can take away here into how did you go about making sure that you had sufficient funding to undertake some of the key programs that were necessary across the state?
You know, this is a great question because year after year, this is one of the biggest challenges. It's that, you know, security generally, you know, the notion of we don't get enough funding or there's not enough, you know, additional money. But I would then challenge, and this is the take that I put at throughout the years, is are we making the most effective use of the resources we have? I've also heard it said that there's not enough people. You know, mm-hmm. what I mentioned earlier about transforming, how, you know, building teams of common knowledge across different departments, bringing them together. So reducing that duplication of even human resource work and bringing right. people together. So the question I would ask is, are people doing some of those things and really bringing in teams that can work together? And then, you know, I think one of the challenges that security has had, particularly in the public sector, is showing the value, right? So how does security show the value to the business? And that's really through metrics and key performance indicators that really can show the value that security is bringing to the business financially. I'm not talking about preventing a breach or anything like that. Those are important. But I'm talking about really, you know, how does security, for instance, enable cost optimization for user productivity? You know, and I can run off a whole bunch of different, you know, use cases of return on security investment to show the business that value. And I think today there's a lack of that going on where that there's a lack of that attachment to the business outcomes, that security is still not providing some of those metrics that could help provide that extra level of support and funding for the security program. Also, it's about resources, right? So the CISO has to be a leader, has to be a coach. One of the things that I loved about the position is really is that coaching element and really, you know, taking care of my team, building my team from the space of capacity of what it is that drives them. For instance, I look at it as almost like a baseball team, right? So in the baseball world, you have a catcher, you have a pitcher, you have all these people on the field, and it's identifying what are the strengths of your team and letting those players, you know, if we look at it from that perspective, letting them thrive, letting them grow in the position that they're passionate about. And then you can just grow in that passion, give them the training, give them extra training, helping them build where they're really good at and what they really like to do. And then the baseball world, as that example, we wouldn't necessarily make the pitcher catch. They might not be comfortable with that, or the catcher pitch and all sorts of other things, because they do what they do well. That's their position on the field. And what I've found is that if we can do that, we can build our teams and build rock stars out of them in the places where they really are passionate about, then we have retention. You know, I think my retention at, you know, throughout my tenure was almost like 99%, because I looked people as to what drives them. What are the things that they love to do? They're passionate about security. But as we know, in security, you've got policy, you've got assessments, you've got forensics, you've got incident response. There's so many different areas of cybersecurity. And what are the areas that people thrive? And how do we build our teams so that we have that retention and that we are building rock stars out of our security teams so we don't really have those resource issues, and we're really increasing that knowledge? And then finally, one other point I'll make is just really building that collaboration. I tried to make it, particularly in my position, really building those relationships with the governor's office and our CIO department, and really being a partner, a collaborator, working horizontally across the different IT departments and building that collaborative influence, which I think a CISO needs to do through good communication standards and really building, you know, that social toolkit to really be a partner. And that's getting outside your silo or getting outside your comfort zone sometimes and really doing that personal kind of stuff. And that's going to build the support. That's going to help drive the collaboration, the funding. And again, good reporting, good metrics to show value at the end of the day. And you know, here's how we're improving the program. Here's how we're supporting the business and the governor's initiatives.
You make some fantastic points there that are so relevant to security leaders today, you know, because collaboration has to be the way to go. We cannot work in isolation. I think the retention issue, because obviously it's not just the cost of trying to hire in people. There's the training and all of the loss of that knowledge when they leave. So to be able to retain them and as you say, turn them into rock stars, get the most that they can from the time that they're with you and develop their careers. And that first point you made about alignment with the business as a means of justifying what it was that you're doing and adopting what I would call much more of an outcome-driven approach. And I want to drill into that in a little bit more detail because a lot of people that I talk to struggle with that one, mm-hmm. You know, because they are so used to, I think, perhaps not viewing it in that way because that's perhaps the more traditional way of looking at security. But increasingly, of course, we have to move to that, you know, value-based world and demonstrating that, really understanding how to go about doing that, I find a lot of security leaders struggle with at the moment. So take us into that in a bit more detail, if you would.
I love this topic because you're absolutely right. This is something, the fact that I got to work with three different CIOs is fantastic because I learned so much. They were all so different. And, you know, I'll never forget one of the times when a new CIO came in and he said, I need you to show value for the security services that we have.
Right.
And I was like, because that's the struggle, right? It's how do we do that? And so I took this approach of calling it return on security investment or ROSI,
right,
and really looking at it from a business perspective. So what do business leaders know? They know dollars and cents. How can we show them then how these security services are showing that value back to the business? And again, you know, in the past I've said, well, we might have, you know, there could be a breach or, you know, we need to do this. That sometimes doesn't resonate because it's abstract.
Mm-hmm.
It is important, but it's not tangible. It's not real. Like as far as, you know, we can't really point to it. We can say, yeah, that could happen, but it's not enough. So what I try to do, and I think this is very effective, is taking a service, you know, and I'll use the case of spam filtering, right? So everybody needs spam filtering. Everybody understands that. But, you know, there's a cost, right? So there's an annual cost to spam filtering. We know what that cost is. And also, if we're collecting good service data, and that's important here, it's to make sure we can measure through our services, what is the data that we're capturing? So if we have good service data and we know how many spam emails are blocked on an annual basis, and let's say, I don't know, it's at 1 billion, I'm just throwing that number out there,
mm-hmm. Then
we know, okay, these are nonsense emails. Not even, let's say they're not even dangerous. They're just marketing, you know, spam, just, you know, just nonsense stuff. That if we didn't have the service, what would that mean? That every day, every employee would get, you know, let's say 25 extra emails in their inbox.
Right.
Well, when you multiply that times 80,000 end users, mm-hmm. And you add this up a day, and how much time would it take each of these users to actually look through each of those emails? And even if a conservative 10 seconds, right, for each, then we're wasting employee productivity by looking through nonsense. So if you do that math and you show the business, hey, look, we know the business, this service costs this much, but look at what we're getting back in user productivity, and it could be like thousands of percent of return on security investment. And that's just one example. You know, there's examples with phishing testing and how phishing testing and utilizing that service data metrics and showing, hey, look, if we really had a real incident, then, you know, this is the value of the security awareness program and why it's worth spending this money per year, because we're getting that money back on the back end. Because if we didn't do these tests, then we know by these metrics definitively, we would have to wipe machines, we would have to reset user accounts. And even if we take that conservative example of how much, you know, what's the average hourly cost for an employee? Are there a salary? How much time does it take to wipe a machine, reset a password? That adds up. Mm-hmm. And when you do that over the course of a year, those numbers are astronomical. And you're basically showing the business, hey, look, this is real. And that actually is where the light bulbs went off, because I worked with a lot of agency CIOs and I kind of expressed this stuff. I was showing them, particularly with some of their phishing metrics, and they got it.
Yeah.
Because it's financial data. They get that, right? So anytime we can show real outcomes like that, they really then start to understand the value.
Yeah, and it raises the level of engagement, doesn't it? Because you're now talking about things in a language that they can understand and they can relate to. I mean, I loved your example about spam, for instance, you know, and blocking all of that, because we all suffer from that.
Yeah.
Everybody suffers from that. And so I think those are some really good examples of how you can bring value. Now, you've moved out of the public sector and you've gone into the private sector. Tell us about that. What are the differences?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. You know, 16 years in the public sector, I spent 10 and a half years as the state CISO, and that's a long time. And, you know, in this role of state CISO, you know, maybe 3 to 4 years, you know, it's most. So, yeah. So 10 and a half years is a long time. And really, again, going through a lot of changes and making that shift to the public sector. I think, you know, for me, it was about taking the knowledge that I've gained, all the lessons learned, all the mistakes I've made, and I've made my share, right? And learning through each of those and learning what works and bringing that experience and saying, look, you know, I've got all this amassed knowledge. How can I take that and help people? So really, when I left, you know, I made that transition. It was really about what are my strong points? What are the strengths that I have? And it's really coaching and it's wanting to help and taking that knowledge, bringing it to where I am now and being able to apply it and actually just help other security leaders that are going through a lot of the same stuff, you know, that I've either been through or I might have some insights on, and just really helping them with that. And so I think in private sector, it's, you know, there's a lot of commonality with security overall, right? Everybody's challenged with the same things, whether you're small government, small company, big company. We all have that fabric of security services and capabilities that we need to have that are pretty common, regardless of whether they're insourced or outsourced. They still have to get done, and we still need to measure them and improve and all that stuff. But it's really about improving that. So everybody's trying to improve, but with the private sector, taking that experience that I have and really helping my clients and helping our customers thrive. And I think at the end of the day, it's taking that practical knowledge and applying it practically, where they can maybe not make those same mistakes that I made along the way and maybe get to where they need to go quicker. And I love that, right? Because I think you're at the end of the day, you're just helping people. So I've loved the transition that I've made because it's just the next step in where I've wanted to go or what I needed to go is taking that and saying, how can I use this and actually help people and help people grow and improve? And so so that's one of the benefits, I think, any CISO that's leaving their position, going into the private sector, I would say, take a look at what are your strengths? What have you learned along the way? And how can you apply that as you move into the private sector? You know, you might want to be another CISO at another company, and that's fine. But if you're going into a, you know, a different area, what are those strengths and how can you use it to help people?
Eric, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing some of those really insightful examples. I mean, you've really made it come alive, I think, for our listeners with some really practical tips there about how you can, you know, demonstrate in ways that everybody can understand the value of what you do. And I think your energy and enthusiasm really comes across there. So thank you very much for sharing that. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. I really appreciate it. Yeah, security's a passion. And thanks for having me.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Eric Avakian. We'll be back next week with a new episode. If you found value in the conversation today, please rate and review the podcast and share this episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn at Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.